Hello and welcome to another episode of The Last Video Store, the show where I, Alexis Choliopoulos, talk to cool, funny, interesting, and exciting people about their favorite movies in the style of an old school video store rental combo, which includes a star pick recommendation from my big old movie mind. And this episode is a special one because, dare I say it to you, happy birthday, Em.
Thank you so much.
It's 2 years of doing The Last Video Store.
Oh,
this is
God,
an anniversary
so
episode. It's an anniversary episode.
Wow.
We're celebrating two episodes. 2 years. Around 100 episodes or something, I think we
yes,
must be at now.
Yes.
I just know that it's around this time. Your favorite memories of doing this podcast with me?
Oh, my God. I mean,
positive only.
I bet you never just rattled up a bunch of
bags. The way you mistreat me.
The screaming.
The way you make me clean the discs. They're not even real.
Well, you know I loved the Lee Whannell episode.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was a pinch me moment.
Yeah,
that was
me too.
So cool. And same with having Damon Herriman
Just the other week, Damon Herriman popping in.
Because I forgot to mention that he stars, if you want to say stars, which he is the star in my eyes, in one of my other favorite films.
House of Wax.
I fucking love House of Wax.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Is Matt O'Kine in that movie as well?
Is he?
I can't remember. Matt O'Kine's
in
some.
Wouldn't he be like a child?
Yeah. No.
It's not that old. He's not that old. The movie's like 20 plus.
Yeah.
Now?
How old do you think? Oh, maybe we should talk about Matt O'Kine's age on the podcast.
You look great.
Yeah. He looks beautiful. I think he's in one of those movies.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, well, that's good. I'm glad I brought some joy into your life.
Oh, big time. And I guess my favorite part is working with my dear friend, Alexi.
Oh, my God. Tears are pouring from my eyes. But this is a special episode. We've got my best bud, Cam James, to join us again.
Yeah. Time's a charm.
Yeah, maybe it's even more than that now. But love Cam, obviously. We're always trying to cook up some good shit together.
Mm-hmm.
And currently, I can finally announce this, we're actually hosting a screening together. It's the first time we've hosted a screening together in years. As many of you know and have been attending, I do a Saturday film club at the Opera House. We're bringing it back with a very special one for Vivid. This is Saturday Film Club presents True Stories, a film by David Byrne, the lead of Talking Heads.
Yeah.
It's the only film that he's directed. It's such a cool film. Cam and I picked it out together going like, oh, we should do this. Because no one's really talked about it. A lot of people haven't even seen this movie.
I've never seen it.
It's quite rare to the True Stories. It's a musical that stars John Goodman.
Mm.
But it's like, it's such a cool, strange, beautiful film. If you like this show, you have to come. This is the one where I'm going, come to Saturday Film Club at the Opera House for True Stories. It is a rare thing.
Mm-hmm.
So many people, when I was trying to program this, go, I didn't know this movie exists. And now they're all stoked about it. So that is on the 30th of May at the Sydney Opera House. The way that it works is Cam and I introduce a film together. Then we come back out after and we talk to you, the audience, about the film.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
I went to the first one that you did, or the second. First
second
one,
one
you
did. I think, maybe. Did you come with one with Maria?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was such a fun thing to do on your weekend.
And that is definitely like, what a great film to do with.
Yeah.
Come see me at the comedy festivals, but also another little plug, another Vivid thing I'm doing. I'm hosting the fucking big Sean Baker talk, dude. I'm talking to Oscar winner Sean Baker live at Vivid. Buy links in the show notes. I'm just going to plug that there too because it was a true honor to be asked. I feel like that was my pinch me moment, going, my city that I grew up in appreciates what I've been doing enough to get me to host the big talk with Sean Baker.
Wow. Sean Baker to you is what Alexi Choliopoulos is to me.
Wow. Oh,
does that make you uncomfortable?
It makes me really sad for your life.
All right.
Let's get to our chat with Cam James and happy birthday, babies. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Last Video Store, hosted by me, Alexi Choliopoulos. This is a show where I talk to cool people about their favorite movies and give them a little recommendation based on their taste. And we have reached another milestone. I think it's 100 episodes, maybe 2-year anniversary.
Wow.
I don't like to put it exactly on the date, which is also how I live my romantic life, but it is, I'm going to be celebrating an anniversary as of this very day. And join me, as always, on an anniversary special. As always, there's been one. It is my dearest friend, Cameron James.
It's so great to be here in what is now a tradition.
I think two makes a tradition. What do you reckon? I think two makes a
tradition. Also, what's the 2-year anniversary gift?
I think it's podcast appearance.
I think it might be. Yeah, I guess congratulations to you.
Oh, thank
you. And
here's
my gift. I'll be on your pod for an hour or so.
Wow, awesome. Well, I'm so glad you could do that. And I'm so glad you could uphold tradition.
Yeah, I'm a very traditional guy, as you know. Every single tradition in the world I follow.
What are some of your favorites? Because you've experienced all of them.
But
yeah. Yeah. What are your favorites? I've experienced
everyone. Probably Christmas.
Yeah, it's pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah, New Year's.
Yep, it's pretty good.
Easter.
I think this is interesting because you are a traditional guy.
Yeah.
You love upholding these traditions.
Yeah.
The ones you like the most are the most traditional.
Yeah, I've gone for the most traditional ones. I've also gone in chronological order.
Yeah, I mean, depending where you start.
Christmas.
I mean, Easter is before Christmas, unless you're starting at like...
I'm starting at Christmas.
Yeah, you're starting at Christmas.
But thanks for having me, and I want you to know
I don't believe I've had the pleasure.
Well, you will. Buy me dinner first. Buy me a large chai latte first, which I actually paid for myself.
You paid for yourself.
So I'll have myself.
You'll be having a little pleasure to yourself.
I thought of you.
Thank you.
In the wild.
Really? What do you mean?
Well, I was just...
You thought of me like if I was on I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here, what I'd be like in the wild.
I thought what you would be like out there on the savannah.
Yeah, okay.
And I got really scared.
Yeah, it's
I got
like, really this worried. Guy is an early out.
I was like, he's out for sure.
He's an early out.
He's not eating those grubs.
Yeah, he's a real, a regular Dilruk J singer. He's going to be out our first episode.
Yeah. I thought of you at the cinema, believe it or not.
Oh, good, yes.
I'm sure people often think of you when they're at the cinema.
It's where I'm most famous.
Yeah.
It's where people go in and go, I wonder what that guy's up to.
Yeah, they go, I wonder if he's seen this. And the answer is probably yes.
What was it that you were seeing?
I saw Send Help, the Sam Raimi.
I have not seen it yet.
Joints.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It looks really fun.
It's really fun. But I had a really great experience. I feel like I don't get to go to the cinema as much as I would like. Definitely nowhere near as much as you. And when I do go, I'm seeking a specific type of experience, which is I want the crowd to be like a little bit playful.
Oh.
And I don't want them to be chatting.
Not chatting.
I don't want them to be dead quiet, but I want people having fun with the fact that they are in a live space.
You
want
to hear a gasp?
I want to hear gasps. I want to hear big reactions.
Yep.
And I occasionally want to hear someone making fun of what's going on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Kind of like, you know, when we went and saw, Straight Outta Compton at the premiere.
Yes.
And that was a very live crowd who were just so excited for every NWA reference.
Yeah, they're like, oh my God, he's about to write a song.
Like when they were watching the LA riots and the Ice Cube character, whose name is Ice Cube in the movie,
O'Shea Jackson Jr.
Plays.
As Ice Cube.
As Ice Cube. When he says just to his friends casually, and his friends are also in NWA.
Yeah.
Man.
His friends, such as
Eazy-E and Dr. Dre. He says, man, fuck the police.
Yeah.
And everyone in the crowd was like, oh, here we go. Here we go.
Hey, that's one of their songs.
That was exciting.
The guy whispering to his wife, I think he's about to write a song.
In 4 seconds, we're gonna hear a little bit of like, yo, Dre, I got something to say.
Some guy's like, I didn't know that was a freestyle that was informed by the moment that was happening right before it.
So I had a great moment during the trailers for Send Help.
Wow, okay.
So like pretty subdued crowd to begin with during the trailers, like silence in the room.
They don't have a lot of time to start getting
thinking
hot.
This might be a little bit of a boring crowd, I'm not so sure. And then this guy like bustled into the cinema and he had like a big popcorn and a big Coke. And he was like checking where he was sitting.
Let the record show the way Cameron is miming this man as if Donkey Kong's entered carrying two barrels
underneath each arm, phone in one hand. He's like, where the fuck am I? He's trying to figure out where he is.
He's got a map.
Holding a candle up. It was like full a man grumbling to himself. Okay. And the only noise in the cinema really was just this guy going, what the fuck, where am I?
Oh, wow.
And then he had to like squeeze past people. And
here you are rubbing the seat next to you, go, right?
I'm like, here we go,
mate.
Buddy. He was a few rows in front, but as he was squeezing past people, the trailer for that new Glenn Powell movie,
yes,
How to Make a Killing came on or something. And as he sat down after making all this commotion with his big popcorn, his big Coke, you know, like, ugh, and he like sat down in his chair and he looked up just as Glenn Powell appeared on the screen and he went, oh, this cunt. And I just loved it and it got a huge laugh. And I also loved that he wasn't trying to be funny. He was just like a frustrated man.
Love it.
Living in the moment.
Yeah, he lives life on the edge.
Yeah.
Like he's planning everything at the last minute, it feels like.
Yeah, but he vocalized it.
Love it.
And everyone laughed. Got a big laugh. And then that opened the crowd up. And after that, people were like, all through the movie, and it's a pretty gooey movie with a lot of jump scares and stuff. Everyone was enjoying themselves, going crazy, yelling stuff out. It was one of the most fun experiences I've had in a while.
This guy sounds like the perfect audience member concocted in a lab.
I think he was a plant. Like, he's probably related to Sam Raimi or something.
Hey, man, are you Sam Raimi's cousin? Are you Sam Raimi?
Are you Lance Raimi?
My favorite one like that, because it's always a lone gunman. Like, it's someone out there by themselves.
Yeah.
If it's a group of, like, teens, you go,
I know, I hate that.
No reaction from you guys, sorry.
I need one, you know, two max, two of them.
Two max, three.
Three's a crowd.
Not so much. I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so, babe. I think it should be a lone person.
Yeah.
The best one I ever had was I went to see I think I was with you. I went to go – we were having lunch with a bunch of, like, friends at Mary's Burgers. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go try and see this session on Midsommar. I'd yet to see it. I'm going to run and go see it in the cinema. And I went lone gunman. And then I spotted another lone gunman in front of me. It was this – dare I say, pardon me if this is politically incorrect.
Sure.
A big woman. She was a big woman. And she had –
That could mean anything. That could mean personality. That could mean
– Definitely it means multiple things, which is why I'm using the word big woman. Sure. She was full of life.
Brassy.
Brassy, lustful. Life and she, not unlike your Donkey Kong guy just then, had like big she had brought in
all the accoutrement,
like picnic, you know, big picnic accoutrement in there.
Yeah, walk boy style, sitting down, spreading out.
She's got a meze spread.
Paramar.
Yeah, she's got everything. She got big hunks of bread.
Yeah.
But we're watching Midsommar, and there's a moment where Midsommar really takes a turn. Like, it's a horror movie from the start, but then there's like that second horror movie beat well into that first act, pushing into the second act, where you see these two old people and they leap to their death. When these people die, the woman turns around, she's like, oh my God. And looking around like, what the heck? She
turned around in her seat.
Turn around.
Like, to you or just to, like, in general? Around
to the, like, to speak to the space.
Like, she addressed the audience.
It was almost like a gladiatorial in the stadium, like looking up, looking around.
Yeah.
And like, what the hell?
Are you not entertained?
And we're like, we are entertained and you're increasing it, babe.
Yeah,
like,
you're part of that.
It was so funny to me, because she was just, and every time something like that happened, she's like, oh, geez.
Holy smokes.
It was like, I thought, like, you should know what the movie's going to be. But it was like truly, truly a spectator reaction.
I love that, because I feel like I don't give enough big reactions to movies ever.
Wow. Okay.
I think when it's horror, I never scream, jump, or yell. My reaction is always to laugh.
It's clenched me. I can't let it be known. I'm feeling scared.
I laugh at gore.
Yeah.
And I'm like laughing in that nervous way where you're like, wow, this is crazy.
You say you laugh at gore. Can I recommend you a movie?
Is that what you're going to say? An
inconvenient truth.
Not so. I've been lucky enough to go to the cinemas with two giant reactors. Mm-hmm. Tom Cashman, big reactor to horror, and Damien Power, big reactor to horror as well.
Damien.
And like both of them, full body reactions, squirming, covering their eyes, leaping backwards.
Oh my God.
Cashman, during the movie Him, which is an insane movie, was like,
it's about sports and horror,
screaming and squealing and kept going, are you serious? Yeah. And they weren't. It's not even a scary movie.
Wow!
It's like a
it's not like really
a tone piece.
Yeah, I usually go to concerts with Cashman, and he's also big reactions at concerts too.
He is bigger. He's a good reactor.
We've got to get Cashman.
I feel like that sort of stuff really makes me react better, and I want that. I want someone around that's going to amplify my physical experience.
You need like a jester.
I need someone in the crowd that's going to hype me up.
You need
like a Flavor Flav or something. Just some kind of hype man.
Now that would be really exciting.
Just
to have
someone up the front going,
come on, guys.
Come on, you're crazy.
Go, Ben Lomas.
Steve Zelp. Throwing lollies out. Yeah,
come on, guys. Let's get into it. Come on, gang. So whereabouts have you guys been since you've been around?
Yeah, anyone traveled to come see this?
Who's come the furthest?
I love that. I'm seeking, I think
we've put
even
this on.
even more than like a story or a film or whatever. I'm seeking a vibe. And that vibe is like elusive. You can't always get it. But when you do get it, it's very special and you want it again and again.
So we're talking vibes here today. Mm. This is, I think it's like your fourth time on the show now?
I think so, yeah.
So usually we do a return episode. We come back in, you return some of the movies you picked up. You tell me how you feel about them. I noticed you come a little empty-handed today.
I'm completely honest with you. I've forgotten what you lent me last time.
Wow, they got lost in the systems.
They may have gotten lost
in the system. I recommended you Cutter's Way. Which is, you would love that movie.
Wow.
But it's not the vibe, might not be the vibes you're seeking.
It's tough because, you know, you've known me for ages now and you know that I get a little monofocused when I'm into something.
Yes.
And I want exclusively that thing. I want like-
We're looking for a diagnosis.
Like love, well, I think it's just I have an overactive imagination.
Wow, that's true.
And last time I think we were talking about noir.
It was big time noir stuff. Yeah. Maybe you picked up Sunset Boulevard.
Yes, yes, yes. Love it, love it.
And we had-
We also watched that Billy Bob one.
Yeah, One Last Move.
One Last Move.
One Last Move. Amazing. Loved it. Horrifying noir.
Loved it.
Film.
It was insane.
And then I can't remember, there was another one else, but I remember I recommended you Cutter's Way, which is Jeff Bridges and- I can't remember his name. The dad from Home Alone.
Yeah, I know the guy. Peter something? No, that's the character in Home Alone. Yeah, Peter McAllister?
Peter McAllister?
He's also in The Sopranos.
Yeah, he's also in The Sopranos, also in After Hours. Great actor. Yeah. Peter McAllister.
Peter McAllister. Peter McAllister. The father.
Yeah, Peter McAllister. The father.
He'd like a hotel room, please. Do you know what? We probably said all this last time I was on.
I think so. I'm having a little bit of deja vu.
Yeah, yeah.
But you were in a noir space.
I was, and I was all about it. But then, as often will happen when I'm in one of these moods, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden, I don't want to watch noir for a while. And it'll be a new thing. And I never know what that new thing is going to be. It could just be an offhand thing. Or I catch 3 seconds of, you know, the movie After Hours. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I only want to watch things that are set in one day.
Yeah.
Or
I only want to watch movies with Peter McAllister and Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got three movies, at least. Yeah.
I can splice her into some Sopranos eps, I suppose. Or it's, you know, I only want to watch movies about angels or something. Like I get really specific and I just, I guess I moved on from the noir thing and I didn't watch it. I apologize.
No, because I'm only about the vibe and that recommendation lasts forever, you know?
Yeah.
Sure, you're meant to return it within 7 days, but that is just the loose premise of this program.
Yes.
But, you know, the recommendation is there for you for life. When the next time you go through your cycle of noir, there's
that
one way.
Cutter's Way is there.
You will adore Cutter's Way.
Well, that's the thing. Like these sort of movies, and often you are a good font for this. You're a great font. You're a sans serif. You will recommend something to me and you'll explicitly say, you will love this. And then maybe 2 years goes by and I finally watch it.
And then
you're
go back to me and you go, hey, I've got this great recommendation for you. I'm the one I gave it to you, mate.
I would never recommend anything to you because I know you've seen most of it. But I will credit you. I'll go, Alexi's been saying I should watch this for years. After Hours is an example of one of those. I think it took me 4 years to watch it after you recommending it.
That's great.
I loved it. And now it's a go-to picture.
Beautiful. Well, today, what vibes are you seeking? You've been on a different bent? Or should we just get straight into like talking about some of the movies you want to talk about?
Maybe the vibe will reveal itself.
Okay. Well,
but I think it's a really hard one to nail down, but I do think it's there. And I think you will have a bit of fun trying to recommend something in that one.
Yeah. I plan to have fun.
Yeah.
I'm a font.
Yeah, it's Comic Sans.
Well, head over to the new release section, pick up a new movie, then head around, pick up a couple of weeklies, come back, we'll talk about them, and then the font shall spray.
Okay, what?
I don't know. Font, I thought it was fountain.
Yeah, I think it might be.
I don't really know.
Me neither.
I've heard people say that word, but I don't have a visual of what I imagine when I hear them say it.
Well, while I'm in the new releases, why don't you look up what a font is, and I'll meet you back here in 5.
Beautiful.
New release.
A font is a specific digital or physical set of characters, letters, numbers, symbols sharing consistent design, weight, and size, such as Arial Bold 12 point. That's what a font is. And Cameron James, you are several many wonderful fonts, and you've picked up several many great films.
I have.
You've got a new release title here, a film that I quite liked. Quite a lot from last year. I was lucky enough to see this wonderful film at the Sydney Film Festival. It is directed by James Griffiths. It is called The Ballad of Wallace Island.
Comedy.
Yeah, I fully head over heels with this movie. Just loved it. Didn't know what to expect. I knew that it was based on a short film that they had made a long time ago, 17 years ago.
Wow. Really? I didn't know that.
Mm.
Tim Key is one of the stars of this movie. I believe he co-wrote the film.
With Tom Bazin, who's the other star of the film. Carrie Mulligan is also in this.
But
she's not in the short.
Have much creativity to involve.
Her creativity is strictly in her role as an actor. Mm-hmm. One of the great actors.
Great modern actor, yes.
Yeah, one of the great modern actors. Loved it. I just didn't know what to expect. I've been a big fan of Tim Key for a long time as an actor and a comedian and a comedic actor.
Yeah.
I couldn't be a bigger Alan Partridge fan, and he's been a huge part of that show and universe for the last 10 years. So I was very excited to see it. I've seen his stand-up shows when he's come out here, and they're kind of I don't know if you've been lucky enough to see him, but they're like they're theater pieces as much as – I wouldn't even say he's a stand-up. They're like – comedic theater shows with a very specific vibe and tone that, again, is something I'm like constantly chasing. I can just never find it because there's only one Tim Key.
Yeah.
And the closest I can get is anytime he puts a short film out or anytime he appears on a podcast or, you know, he's in a new Partridge thing. So, of course, I was like gunning to see The Ballad of Wallace Island. And it took me by surprise because it's like a whole new side to Tim Key that I didn't even know existed. So
he has this gentleness about him.
Totally. But if you've seen him live, that's not what his vibe is.
No.
His vibe is a little bit aggressive. It's alternative comedy, you know. Yeah. So he's pretty aggressive with the audience. He doesn't give you any common ground to walk on. Mm. He's always throwing you off balance. He mixes in bizarre stories that are either partly true or greatly exaggerated, full of lies. Mm. With little poems that he reads off playing cards, and the poems are like absurd, surreal little one-liners essentially. There's music, there's short film, there's often props, dance. There's a lot going on. But it's decidedly a more dark vibe on stage, deliberately. You know, like he's playing with the idea of being a tortured artist. But in this film, it was like a ray of sunshine. I kind of couldn't believe it. I didn't know what I was watching for the first few minutes, and then I just sort of fell in love with the guy.
The movie is about this former folk duo played by Tom Basden and Carey Mulligan, who were quite successful back in their day. They've since split up. But Tim Key's character is an eccentric lottery winner.
Yeah.
Who lives on this tiny island, I believe, called Wallace Island. And he loves this band, and he basically has been trying to get them to reform and come play for a show on this island.
Yeah.
But the island has like, I don't know, sub 15 people on it.
Yeah, it's like, did you ever watch Father Ted?
It's very Father Ted, and it's like how I accuse many English shows of either being just Fireman Sam or Postman Pat.
This
is a real Postman Pat
vibes.
It's got
Postman Pat vibes. Tiny island, everyone knows each other. Everyone has shorthand. There's a sweetness. I think what I loved about it is, you know, that's a great premise for a movie. Millionaire tries to reunite his favorite band for a private concert. that could be a broad comedy, you know, premise. You could see some like a weird Will Ferrell mid-2000s yeah. movie with that premise. But this is incredibly gentle. It's soft. It's very sweet. There's a real vein of melancholy throughout it. Implied backstories that are never fully explained.
In a very, I think, kind to the viewer way, where they just allow you to kind of picture some stuff, use like your way of understanding things. But because it's all in this, these really fabulous performances, but Tim Key, I think he's capable of greatness.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he exhibits like greatness from the script being so nicely put together. But that performance and that characterization from him, I think when I saw this, I might have texted you very, like, quite soon after. I said that Tim Key could be the John Candy of a whole new generation.
Yeah, it's a bit of a Del Preston. Is that the character's name? Del Griffith.
Yes.
Del Griffith.
Yeah.
Del Preston is the roadie from Wayne's World 2.
That's true.
Del Griffith from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles type performance, in that he is, on paper, a very annoying guy. And he's one of those guys that can't stop quipping. He's a little bit of a motor mouth. Everything he says seems designed to piss off Tom Basden's character. A lot of puns, a lot of like rolling chit chat. But I mean, if anyone else is playing that character, even for example, say like a Zach Galifianakis in the 2010s, it would get pushed to a point where it is unlikable.
Due date. We're talking due date.
Due date style, which is like, due date is the biggest Planes, Trains, and Automobiles ripoff maybe of all time. But it goes way too far. Like, that character is really abrasive and annoying in a way that Zach excels at, but it's not particularly warm. And Robert Downey Jr.'s character is far too mean in the way that Steve Martin is not. So this was really interesting. I think it was played really well by Tim Key. He goes right up to the line of just being a pain in the ass, but there's something innate in him. I don't even know. I don't want to do a disservice to him because he's a great actor, but he just has one of those faces like a silent movie star or something where you can read every emotion beneath the surface. He has big eyes, a big expressive face. He can't hide every microaggression. So you just feel bad for him because you know that this is a man who is hurting underneath it all. And there's a reason he's isolated, and there's a reason that he's trying to reunite his favorite bands. He's trying to reclaim something. It's really, really special.
What do you think about the music in this?
Really loved it. I mean, Tom Basden wrote the music. He's a comedic actor, and I think he's so great. He's so funny, great in sketch comedies. He's in that Gervais show, Afterlife.
Oh, I've never seen Afterlife.
I gave it a go a year or two ago. Yeah. I went, I should just watch this because I keep hearing.
Give it a shot.
I keep hearing polar opposite things about it. Either people love it or they hate it.
People going into the most I've ever felt watching something, you know?
Or they're like, fuck Ricky Gervais, this sucks. he's schmaltzy. Tom Basden plays like a stick in the mud nerd in that, who's kind of a foil to Gervais's character. He's great in it. He's really great in this. He's a very talented singer-songwriter. Yeah. I believe that this is music that would have been popular in 2010.
It feels so like on point with that. And I think like it is, I like that you use the word schmaltzy because I don't think this movie is schmaltzy.
Not at all.
Like I think it can almost play in that area, but it never falls into twee, never falls into schmaltz.
It steers away from it every time.
Steers away from it every time, but because the emotions feel quite real.
Yeah.
And then I think the comedy in this is, like, it's not like typically groundbreaking comedy in it or anything.
No, it's very gentle.
Very, very gentle, but there is like this currency to the comedy. Like, it feels pretty fresh, new wave kind of comedy, the way that you would think of Tim Key. And I think that being applied to this kind of like gentle comedy that we're familiar with, you know, it's not too far removed from something like The Commitments or Full Monty.
Yeah.
Local Heroes, another movie that you mentioned.
Totally. These are all like, I just feel like there was a time when there was films being made that were small human comedies with a bit of drama, sometimes a bit of magic realism, and they were about communities, small towns, and either a threat to that community or someone having to learn to love where they're from or love a new small town that they've never been to before. I love the Full Monty.
Yeah.
I think it's a go-to comfort movie for me. Yeah,
but it was because you mainly want to see Tom Wilkinson's dick.
And sadly, you never get to see anyone's dick in the movie. You just see ass.
If I could change the song, take your hat off. Don't leave it on.
Take it off at the beginning of the movie, please.
Please.
Save me an hour and a half.
Pop that pecker out. Show me that todger.
Show me the todger.
One last thing on this movie, Ballad of Lost Island. Mm. I think because it's a comedy, it is worth noting how visually beautiful this movie is.
Totally.
Well. Like, shot beautifully. Wallace Island is such like a wonderful character to it. Like, there's so much lovely, even color is really lovely.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like these nice moody blues and grays that I think work so well in visually capturing the sweet melancholy feeling of this film as well.
It'll make you want to go to those sorts of places. Yeah. Like, I remember when I saw Banshees of Inisherin, all I wanted to do was go to like a little tiny Father Ted Island, and just off the coast of Ireland somewhere, and be on a sheep farm. And I mean, I'm a sucker for that fisherman core anyway.
Oh, yeah. You'd love to be a cable knit sweater
guy. I'm obsessed with cable knit sweaters. But you can't do it
in our climate.
I know. We just don't live in the right country for it.
In the dead of winter, if you're wearing a cable knit, you're like, I'm itchy, I'm scratching, I'm sweating, I'm schwitzing.
Yeah, we're not in the right place for it. But when I have been lucky enough to go to the UK, Scotland, Ireland, I feel so at home there. Buy it on the way in, land at Heathrow. Pop the cable knit on.
I've heard wonderful things about Heathrow.
Oh, you'd love it. You'd love it.
We're going to move on to your next pick.
Weekly.
You've gone to the weekly section. You've picked a film that it's interesting because I think it's quite near and dear to my heart.
Mm.
But I reckon it's an interesting film for me where I feel like let's get into it. You picked up a film from Terry Zwigoff, based on Daniel Clowes' graphic novel.
Yeah.
You picked up Ghost World.
Cult.
Yeah. I'd seen it before, not for a long time, but I've just fallen in love with Daniel Clowes.
Mm.
It's like a new thing for me.
Because you were never a comic book graphic novel guy. Famously, to the people that listen to this podcast, to them, they would know this offhand. When you said Ghost World, wait a second, Ghost World, I wonder if Cameron knows this is based on graphic material. Famously, he hasn't really gotten into those until that one episode of Special Features where Alexi recommended Cameron a bunch of comics.
Yeah, I got really – you recommended me a bunch, and then our friend Justin Hamilton did as well.
Of course.
And I found my way in.
I currently have, I think, 3 graphic novels on loan from Justin Hamilton.
I have like 3 on loan from you that I still haven't given back, and I've read them and I loved them. Okay. I still have your giant fade out.
Look, I was looking for
them. Yeah, I've got
you're trying to absorb them.
I've got them. I should give them back. Got in through the DC ones, which I think is probably a gateway for a lot of people.
You're Batman. And then, you go, I want to see what the long Halloween is actually about.
You see all this stuff, and then you go to Superman and you love all that.
Then you go maybe to an Image comic, and then you go, actually, exactly let's what go I did. To independent I went to stuff.
Criminal through you and the fade out. And then once you're there and you're away from Men in Tights, you go, well, let's check out some more human stories.
Yeah.
And that, I guess, leads you to the alternative comics world of Daniel Clowes or someone like that. So I've made my way through all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about vibe earlier, I think this is the vibe that I'm currently chasing. There's a very specific Daniel Clowes vibe. It's suburban mythology, I think, is what I would try to categorize it as. It's ordinary people living ordinary lives in sort of nondescript parts of America, usually, or the world, but they are trying to make sense of who they are in the context of the universe or history, and they're trying to place themselves as like part of a grand myth.
And a bit of like culture as well informing where that is. Like not popular culture, but
some of it is popular culture.
Jazz in case of Ghost
World. Ghost World is like, every character in that is defining themselves by their taste.
Yes, their relationship
to sort of what the movie is about, what the positives and negatives of that. But his latest 2 books, which I would recommend to you if you haven't read them, Patience and Monica, they don't even go anywhere near pop culture, but they are about, they're about like who am I is what they're about, you know, in the context of history and the cosmos and the universe. And because he's a little bit of a nihilist at heart, like they're not optimistic stories, but there is a real beauty in amongst the nihilism as well. And I think Monica actually was one of the most life-changing reads I've had in a long time. I've never read anything that creative. It's one long story broken up into 9 chapters, but if you don't want to look at it as one long story, you don't have to. They're all different genres, like different visual styles.
Oh, this sounds right up my alley, Cam.
They're all told from different perspectives. Some of them are grounded in reality. Some of them are pure fantasy. Some of them are set in the future. Some of them are genre stories. But really, they're all part of the subconscious of the main character, Monica, trying to deal with the things that have happened to her and trying to give her life some sense of myth so that it makes sense and so that she feels important.
And Patience?
Patience you will love as well. It is a time travel action story.
Done, sold.
But it's Daniel Clowes style. So
I can't even imagine.
Fucking wild. Yeah, and it's beautiful and it has body horror in it and it's sad and melancholy. I just love – there's something that he does where he – and I think it's, you know, a lot of it comes from the fact that I grew up in a suburban town that has a lot of industry and a lot of fast food chains and then like a scrappy little art scene of people that are trying to act as if they are in a big city. I can relate a lot to these characters who are kind of wandering through car parks and shopping malls and sort of suburban wastelands trying to feel like they're part of something bigger. Ghost World is all about that.
I think Ghost World, it's a film that, for those who haven't seen, it's about two teenage girls that just graduate high school. And they're, I guess, trying to find who they are in a way. There's a little bit of cynicism to who they are.
Yeah.
And they befriend this strange older record collector played by Steve Buscemi. And this has like a magnificent cast. Thora Birch, Scarlett Johansson, Steve Buscemi, Brad Renfro, Ileana Douglas, and Bob Balaban make up the core cast of this film. And I'm like, come on, that's like a bunch
that's
of
already
my
insane.
Names. Yeah.
And then there's also Dave Sheridan playing the character Doug. He's probably most well known to to people as Officer Doofy from Scary Movie.
Yeah.
And also as the mullet guy from all those Red Hot Chili Peppers music videos. He's like a groundling. He's playing like an original character that's not in the comic. It's a character that he invented.
Because it's a kind of an interesting adaptation because Close and Zwigoff have a good relationship. I believe they did Art School Confidential after this as well. But then Close has done like the illustrations for Zwigoff's other movies, whether it be the poster or like DVD cover or something like that.
And Zwigoff made the Crumb documentary before this. So he's clearly like very interested in this world of alternative comics. And
if no one has ever seen the Crumb documentary, it's just called Crumb, about Robert Crumb by Terry Zwigoff. It's one of like the essential documentary films.
You know, and like they kind of go hand in hand because the Crumb character or the Crumb real guy is really similar to the Buscemi character in this. He's a guy that lives outside of time. Buscemi's character in this collects like records from the 20s, like old blues and jazz.
I mean, another Zwigoff movie, Louis Bluey, is like all about that scene as well.
It's a really odd, like the movie really and the comic are both about people that are sort of in the middle of nowhere in like a ghost world, a town that is kind of moving on without them. It's not a main city. It's populated by strip malls. They feel like they don't have culture, so they're trying to collate different quirks and affectations to give themselves some sense of identity, even going so far as like the Enid character looks different in every scene, which comes directly from the comics. Every time you see her, she's got a new haircut, different glasses, her hair's a different color, she's wearing different style clothes. And the Buscemi character is a guy that relishes in the old.
Yeah.
He collects like old, like
kitsch.
kitsch, cancelable art, like the sort of things
that
you
that Rob Crumb would be drawing.
Yeah,
the kind of things that your grandpa will show you once, and you go, okay,
stuff that like literally my grandma has like a mug on her shelf that every time I go see her, I'm like, you gotta put that away.
Come on, that's put a really, cloth over it, man.
It's really not okay to have that. But it's like these are people that are collecting quirks to try and feel like they have some sense of culture in the small town they belong in. And I think what elevates this movie to me is that it crosses over at some point into not quite magic realism, but some sense of
it dances a line.
Yeah,
right?
There's like a borderline supernatural moment in this movie where Enid, the main character, boards a bus and leaves the town, and the bus may or may not exist.
Yeah.
It's up to you. You can either choose to believe that she's imagining leaving this town and finally going out and seeing more, or did she actually leave, or is it a suicide analogy?
I think
there's a lot of different ways to read it.
Really nice way you're putting it, because it's like, I think this is a thing that is unique to cinema storytelling, which is, it's different from, you know, literary storytelling, a written word book, as I call it, book storytelling, which is in a book, that's magic realism. Mm. But in cinema, you can get away with a lot more. And so, yes, there are films, obviously, like, you know, Guillermo del Toro type shit, where it's like, that's magic realism straight up. But in cinema, something like they can get away with, and I think it's just cinematic. Like, it's how you would describe it, is like, you know, not quite movie magic.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I'd say that's when you see E.T. or something.
For like, sure, that's movie magic.
That's
when
movie
you see
magic.
E.T.,
anything you'd see at Universal Studios, that's movie magic.
For sure.
But something like that in Ghost World, where it's like, I'd say it's like a poetic image.
Yeah.
And it could be real, could not be. Same with, like, you know, Sean Baker, the ending of Sean Baker's films, where they go
Florida
to
Project.
Florida Project, where they go to Disneyland, like those kind of things, where it's like, this could actually be happening, it could not, but we're showing it to you as if it were.
Yeah.
It's up to you to interpret it. I think that's just really cinematic storytelling.
Totally. You know, I think, like, I really want you to read Monica, because I feel like Dan-
I'm probably going to go past a bookshop after we say goodbye today.
It's also a really beautiful, like, thing to have in your house.
Yeah.
I think you would enjoy having it
on
the
shelf. I
love
to have beautiful things.
It looks amazing.
Home.
But Dan Klaus loved working on this film so much, and I feel like, because that's an image that's not in the comics.
Yeah.
This idea of this bus that may or may not exist. That, writing that with Terry really informed some of his later work, and in particular, Monica has a lot of moments like that, and in particular the ending, where it crosses over into a zone that, you know, is fully up to you to decide whether it happened or not. And it's, I like, breathtaking. I loved it.
This is a film that's, like, persisted for me in interesting ways, because I would have seen it as I was in high school, like, towards the end of high school when I was working in the video store. And it was appealing to me. It was in that art house cult section. It was about teenagers. I wanted to see movies about teenagers. And obviously, as a kid who's working in a fucking art house video store at 17, I'm relating to the Thor Birch and Scully Johansson characters quite a lot. And there's one moment in this where I think this – It really illustrates what extremely well-observed and funny study of alienation this is. And not just teen alienation, but, you know, the alienation that persists on when you explore the Steve Buscemi character. But that teen alienation is landed so well when the girls are at, like, their high school formal, their prom or whatever, their graduation party. And there's just a shot of them looking at one other student who's, like, kind of like a nerdy looking chubby guy, a husky guy, just eating a piece of cake. And they go, I think this is going to be the last time I ever see that guy. And I think that's one of, like, the truest observations where I go, I remember having thoughts like that. Like, I'm never going to see this guy again. And it's just some guy smoking a cigarette, like, on the pier or something at my school. But it's like, it captured that so well. And then I think of Ghost World because I've revisited a few times, quite a few times. But it's almost this way that I've never had this experience with this other film, but The Graduate.
Mm.
I remember reading, I think Roger Ebert talking about The Graduate, going, when you see it young, it means everything to you. And then as you grow older with the film, your relationship changes to it and it becomes a bit less meaningful. Mm. It's a movie about youth in a really strong and evocative and poignant way. And I think I've almost feel like I'm having that relationship with Ghost World. Like the last time I revisit it, I didn't feel as striking, but I still fall for those charms, like those moments like that, and then the aesthetic of it. But it's a film that I go, God, I got to constantly revisit it because it meant so much to me.
Hmm.
And I think it informed so much of my tastes. But I don't know if I can have the same relationship I had with it when I was like a teenager, and it like meant a bit of that, the near future to me or something, you know?
I feel like I've had the opposite. I saw it when I was younger and I liked it, but it didn't stick.
Yeah.
And it's only kind of recently that I've realized that this writer and this filmmaker together have tapped into an experience that I had a lot as a kid and a teenager and someone in my early 20s living in the burbs and not having a car and not really having a job or any hobbies outside of music.
Yeah.
And the amount of times that we would just walk around and ritualize nothing, like the way these girls do. They make a day out of, let's just follow these two weird people that we see in a diner.
And it captures that malaise of you've graduated school, you haven't now gone to the next thing, and you're just stuck.
I really relate to that in particular because when I graduated school, I had 2 years before I went to uni. Mm. And in that time, all my friends just went straight to uni. So they were all moving on and I wasn't. I was like trying to play music and I was working in this crappy theater restaurant and I was working at a bar at a racetrack.
Yeah.
And I had so much free time.
Rock DJ lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
You're learning a Johnny Depp, Jack Sparrow impersonation.
I just had free time and I remember me and my friend Jared would just kind of hang out at the shopping center for hours and look at people and sort of like ritualize doing nothing.
Yeah.
In a way that these characters do. And it's something that's so gone from my life now. Like, I never have time to sit around. I can't remember the last time I was in a shopping center. But I spent days, weeks, months, years in these things and just looking at people and imagining what their lives were like and coming up with weird backstories for them. And
when was the last time you were on an escalator with a honeycomb thick shake, you know? Like that's to me what being in a mall is about.
I die for a honeycomb thick shake right just now.
Just sitting on an escalator, looking around.
Yeah.
And God, I'm going to see a guy I know in a second.
Or just like, what's that guy's deal?
Yeah.
Just looking at someone.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what this movie is. It's like captures that feeling really well. And it articulates it in a way that I am really responding to because I guess I miss it. It's like this is a time of my life that is now nearly 20 years gone.
Yeah.
And I'll never get it back, which is good, but it's nice to revisit it through art.
That's something I think about is like the pleasure of being bored. It's something I don't often feel anymore. But when you see a great piece of art that can capture that, there's something really potent there.
Totally.
May have actually sparked another recommendation from me to you. But we've got one more film. Mm. I'll give one more recommendation from Ghost World. Talking about the Daniel Close comics, the Ghost World, you can get the graphic novel compendium of it that also comes with the script to the film. Huge, great buy. If you love Ghost World and you haven't read the comic, pick up that version. You can get both together and like really experience like what the translation is from the text to the screenplay then to the screen, because there's a relation between them. It's not the same thing being copy and pasted.
I'll also say there's like whoever was the casting director on this film.
Yeah.
I rewatched it the other day and I was like, I can't believe how well they've cast these people because they look like Daniel Clowes' drawings. The extras in it look like drawings.
Well, I'm going to tell you who it is. Her name is Cassandra Koulikoundis.
She nailed it.
Also cast One Battle After Another.
Oh, wow.
So she's up for the first Academy Award nomination for casting. Her, There Will Be Blood, The Brutalist, Licorice Pizza, Punch Drunk Love, Magnolia, Phantom Thread, Boogie Nights, The Master, Inherent Vice, Ghost World, and two big-time favorites of yours. Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. and Halloween H2O 20 years later.
Blood is thicker than water.
Blood is thicker than water and thicker than it all is LL Cool J, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I can't remember the guy, but that little boy from Jumanji's in that movie, isn't
Alan
he?
Parrish.
Alan Parrish. I'll never know his real name. I just know him as little Alan Parrish.
Yeah, little Alan Parrish might be in it. That's great. Well, good on her. I hope she wins the statue.
We're going for you, Cassandra. We're going to be voting for you at the Oscars this year. But your last pick here. Yeah. Is, I think, playing in a similar space in a darker, nightmarish way.
Mm.
We're looking at a surrealist, a step further into the surrealism, into the nightmare, not unlike a movie we've talked about before on this episode, After Hours. I reckon this is Ari Aster's take on something like that.
Mm.
You're picked up, Bo is Afraid.
Adventure.
Yeah.
Most likely from our 3-day section is my guess.
Yeah, it's probably in the 3-dayer.
Yeah.
It's what, it's 3 years old now?
Yeah, I reckon when you bring it back, I'll put it in the weeklies.
Yeah, it's probably, it needs to be in the weeklies. So when I was beginning my Daniel Clowes journey, I wanted to read and listen to every interview he's ever given. And a bunch of them are with Ari Aster. Because they're tight, apparently. They're good mates. And
how interesting.
Yeah, they've become really good friends over the last few years. In fact, Daniel Clowes is in Eddington. He has a weird parting.
There's
Eddington.
Similar anxieties that they bring to their work that I'm sure floats in their head.
Definitely. They both seem like naturally anxious guys. Mm. Ari Aster said at one point that when he was making Bo is Afraid, he wanted to make something that felt like a Daniel Clowes book. And I think it does in a way. It kind of feels a bit like a Velvet Glove cast in iron. So I finally watched it. And this has been one that, you know, I think I wouldn't say I slept on it.
Yeah.
I full on like avoided it.
Yeah.
I wasn't drawn into the marketing. The imagery wasn't grabbing me. The runtime wasn't grabbing me.
It's a long film. It's a commitment.
It's a commitment, not like The Commitments, is a breeze.
Mustang Seven!
that's a breezy 2 hours. But this, ironically, The Commitments you can watch really easily. Yeah, but
exactly.
But this one is a proper commitment. It's like 3 hours or something.
Yeah, it's long. I remember I saw it by myself on my birthday.
At the cinema.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, I just want to go see this movie. And I went, I had such a uproarious, enjoyable experience watching this movie.
Interesting. I still don't 100% know how I feel about it. And I think that's why I wanted to bring it to you because I would never say I loved this.
Mm.
And I don't think I could ever, in good faith, recommend it to people. It's a real specific thing.
You got to know the person.
You have to know. And that's not a good thing. If you like, if the only way you could enjoy this movie is if you're like, I know Ari Aster and I know his influences and I know what he's going for.
And I know what you and your taste is. Like, I don't know if I would recommend this to you, even though it ticks a lot of boxes that I know you like.
Yeah. I mean, definitely like on paper, this has a lot of things that. There's crossover with a lot of things that I've definitely told you that I love.
Yeah,
there's,
such as Nathan Lane, Amy Ryan.
Obviously, I love the cast in this movie.
Parker Posey.
You know, like I don't dislike a movie with dream logic.
Mm.
I have a fondness for David Lynch. I have a fondness for even his more outre stuff, like Inland Empire or whatever. And this is maybe closer to Inland Empire than it is Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
But I still don't know if I love it. And I think, but I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I remember when I watched Eddington at the cinema, the first 2 hours of it, I was actively thinking, this is one of my favorite movies that I've seen this year. I feel so lucky to be watching this. Then the last half hour, I started thinking, do I actually like this? And then the last 5 minutes, I thought, I think I don't like this movie, but then the next day I couldn't stop thinking about it, and then I went and saw it again the following week and again was like, no, I love it. I love Eddington, and I feel very lucky to get to see Eddington, but I also really enjoy that it gave me all those feelings. I think Bo is Afraid, the feeling I had was the last 5 minutes of Eddington, but for 3 hours. Yeah. I was like, do I like this?
Yeah.
Am I into this? Is this just an exercise in imagery and surrealism with no grounding in reality? Yes. Does that bother me? Not really. Yeah, I'm kind of on board.
Yeah.
But also I would love to be able to grab onto something, and there kind of isn't anything to grab onto. You just have to go with it.
Even that Joaquin Phoenix performance, which should be the anchor to this film, it doesn't quite let you grab onto
it. It's nuts.
Because it's like using him in a way that I think is like quite different, because it captures like has a gentleness about him, Joaquin Phoenix, that can sometimes be dangerous.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's not quite dangerous, but then the gentleness gets smothered in, pardon me, I'm sneezing at some point. I don't know when.
When do you reckon it'll happen? Maybe it's over.
I don't know.
Maybe it's gone.
Maybe I just need to voice that I was sneezing. I don't know.
Do you think it'll come back?
Something happened to me just then. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think a ghost walked through me.
Maybe.
I think I got scared.
That's funny.
But its gentleness like kind of gets smothered in that anxiety. And then that gets fueled by like this psychotic, surrealist world that like blooms around him. So the danger is around him that gets put onto him.
Yeah.
But it's still not like a... There's something about it where he is the perspective character, but then you're still seeing the way the world sees him more than anything.
Yeah, I was trying to – I thought about it like the whole next day.
Yeah, it takes a day to watch. It takes an extra day to process.
I just was walking around being like, okay, so the movie is a artistic and poetic representation of anxiety and of guilt and of – generational trauma. There's nothing real about it. You can't ever for a second be like, okay, now this part is reality, this part is imagined. It's all imagined. It's all
a story. Like it's all a story. Yeah.
It's like we're inside a guy's head, we're inside a guy's emotions. And that's interesting. It is exhausting.
Yes.
And I feel like I got it within the first hour, and then it didn't take me anywhere new after that, but I did enjoy all the imagery that came along with it.
I think what it does well, or what it is seeking out to do, because it's kind of like this odyssey take on this guy's anxieties and this kind of physical journey he's going on.
How are you going to describe the plot to your audience? What would you say?
I would say...
Literally, it's about a guy trying to get home for his mum's funeral, right?
Yeah,
that's literally what we could say in the log line.
Yes.
An anxious man tries to travel home to his mother's funeral. Along the way, he is beset with troubles or whatever.
Picaresque journey.
Yeah, picaresque. Through
space, time and
his own place. His own... mental own state, psyche. His own brain.
He goes to the woods for a watch a play.
He's in
that
a play.
He's in.
He ages.
I think claymation to my memory or something
like
that.
Like cut out South Park style.
He goes on trial. That's
Richard
kind of,
Kind is a judge.
Richard Kind's a judge. Is a giant pecker at a certain point.
Yeah, he fights a giant penis monster. He has sex with Parker Posey.
I mean, that is like the Odyssey.
She dies.
There's a big one-eyed monster in that as well.
I mean, obviously that's what it's riffing on. It's riffing on that, which is kind of fun. But it's like watching a Dali painting for 3 hours.
That's the surrealism it's playing with.
Yeah.
And it's playing textually as well. Like each of those segments that we just, you know, rattled off, they're all different feeling. They're all a different texture.
It's a new vibe every 40 minutes.
And a big complaints were people were not being able to hone in on those textures. Whereas I'm like, yeah, that plays weird, but I loved it.
I definitely liked all of it. Mm. And I think, but I don't know if I did. I still don't know, but I enjoyed the experience of watching it, and I enjoyed what it made me feel. And I think what I really loved was, and I had this thought a few times throughout the movie, this is an artist that we're dealing with, Ari Aster, who has images in his brain that I think are brand new to the world of cinema, and good on him for taking big swings and putting them on screen, because this is a huge swing of a movie. It fucking tanked. You could say it's a career killer. I think Eddington is like a work of genius. but audiences and critics didn't really rally around it in the way that they maybe should have. Maybe this, we'll look back on this as the career killer,
yeah,
or maybe it's just he's in a Scorsese-like dip next and he'll step. Come back with something else.
But that's so, because like if you look at Scorsese's dips, it's like, yeah, After Hours and yeah, comedy, you go, yeah, the two of the best movies.
Yeah, but people hated them.
Yeah, but now it's like people, takes time for people to like them.
Yeah.
I was afraid I was really keen on Eddington, less so, but Eddington's one that I know that I'll revisit because it just like, I think it, I came to it at the wrong time for me to come to it.
What do you mean?
I think that at that point, literally the point in time, I saw it at a film festival and that it was too long for the session that I chose. I go, I don't think I can have the attention to sit down. So that's one thing. The other thing I think I saw that and I felt the same way I felt about Soda Jerk's strange documentary, like I guess you'd call it, so The Dankness, or can't remember, it's not The Dankness, something like that. Can't remember what it's called. And I felt that both of those are interesting document about a time that we all lived through, which is, you know, coronavirus lockdown type feeling. And I feel like time will be kinder to Eddington, where it's like, okay, now more time has passed. I may be more equipped to look at something like that and want to see it be delivered in that way.
Yeah, it like, ages. You know what I mean? It ages well every day.
I really think that's true.
It's like every single thing that has come to pass since it's come out has been a mirror version of what he presented to us in.
And it's like South Park. Like you can say it feels like a South Park, like a feature length live action South Park.
It's a bit like that. A Western South Park. Yeah. I kind of went in knowing I was really going to like it. And then I was, like I said, I had my experience with it, but I've come away from it thinking that I saw all these in the same week. I saw Eddington, One Battle After Another, and Bugonia.
Yeah.
And that week was the most joyous and most excited I've been for the current state of cinema in a long time. I was like away from home working and I was texting Alex, my beautiful wife, and I was saying we are currently living in a time where three filmmakers are being brave enough to reflect what is happening in a way that is really artistic and entertaining and fun and funny. And we're very lucky. You just have to watch these movies. And so she watched them all independently as well. Wow. And we were just talking about how cool it was to see someone, in particular with Eddington, to see someone reflect the last 5 years of our lives back at us in a way that is not subtle. It's not like you could never call it a subtle movie. It's loud.
No way.
It's a little sophomoric in parts. But it begins and ends with the fucking AI plant being built in the desert and all the chaos stems from that. And that is currently what we are living in. Anyway, I liked it more than Bo is Afraid is what I'm trying to say. But there are images in Bo is Afraid that have stuck with me and that I felt inspired by and that made me think I need to embrace my subconscious in a way as a creative person that I'm currently not.
Need to go catch the big fish, David Lynch.
Well, I've read that book I do meditate as a result of it. So I have like, I'm currently fishing.
Wow.
But I was inspired by this movie to dig a little deeper.
The only thing I want to say before we move on is the thing that I love most about Bo is Afraid. I think Patti LuPone playing Bo's mother is one of the most exciting instances of casting the exact right person for a role.
She's amazing. And I'm not even that familiar with her work. Obviously she's a big theater actor and very famous in that world, the Broadway world. I wasn't really that across her. Always knew the name, but I'd seen her in that Marvel show that she's in.
Yes, you love Agatha.
Agatha all along. And I liked her in that a lot and then loved her in Bo is Afraid. Everyone in the cast is great. It's Nathan Lane and Amy Ryan playing fucking villains.
The only way to make it better is if Nathan Lane played the mother.
Oh, my God. Like, but as he does in The Birdcage.
Yeah, either in The Birdcage or in Goldmember where it's someone else's voice.
He's lip-syncing to Patti LuPone. So I still don't fully know if I like this movie, but I think it like you said, it's a nightmare version of that sort of vibe that I am currently chasing, which is, you know, mythologizing the mundane, mythologizing a life in the suburbs and, you know, turning your own small existence into something cosmic and big and, you know, mythological.
Beautiful. Well, I got two recommendations for you that it will, I think, be in that same path.
Okay.
Staff pick.
So your staff picks today. I'm going to give you two.
Okay.
As I like to give you two. I like to overwhelm you so you never watch them. The first one I won't spend too much on because I don't think I need to sell it to you very hard because I feel like you may have already seen it.
Okay.
If not, I think you'll really, really love it. Mm. It's a film we talked about on this podcast before because I had the director on it, but Problemista by Julio Torres.
Comedy.
Haven't seen it, but I love Julio and I love his show. So yes. I'm going to.
I think
it's been on the list.
His true like crowning achievement is Problemista. It's basically, I think what Julio does so well in his comedy is that idea of surrealism of taking a feeling and then translating that into a visual cinematic image. And I think he doesn't do anything better than he does in Problemista when he is able to take this feeling of being like, you know, a migrant, not at home, not at place, and then turning that into these visual images with Problemista. I think it's like the great surrealist comedy of right now.
Great film. That's a great reco, and I'll definitely watch that one, I promise. Have you seen him live? Did you see him in Melbourne last year?
Yeah. I love that show.
Me too. I like really love the Shapes one that is a Netflix special.
Yeah.
I saw that live years and years and years ago. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where the My Favorite Colors one ends up because I feel like what we saw was early days.
Yes.
And it was really fun and I loved it. But I'm really excited to see where it evolves to, especially visually.
Especially visually, because the way he captures visually in that was he just had his phone camera capturing stuff so it could be put up on the screen as he's drawing
Which
and
was
writing
cool.
in real time. It was so cool.
Yeah.
And so funny and so present. Like, he's very present.
Yeah.
Which you don't often see with, like, a surrealist comedian. Mm,
totally.
But Problemista, I don't want to spend too long on it because it captures everything you just said.
Cool.
But more to an urban setting.
Great.
The other one's maybe a little bit more urban too, but I saw this movie for the first time recently, and I just thought of you falling in love with this movie, and it captures so much of everything that you just talked about. It's a 2005 Japanese film by Nobiru Yamashita. It is called Linda, Linda, Linda.
Music.
I saw the trailer for it at Golden Age a little while ago.
They had a few
screens
at Golden
Age. And immediately got excited by the trailer.
I think you will absolutely love this film. It is about four young women in a Japanese high school, and one of them is a Korean exchange student who basically come together to form a Japanese rock punk band that are just going to do one show at their, I guess, like a school talent show, basically. Yeah. And for me, while I was watching this movie, it starts quite slow and I felt like the charms of it may have been lost on me. But slowly, slowly, you can't help but be wrapped up in this kind of singular feeling it has of like a warm sweetness, not unlike a Wallace Island or even, I guess, something like the what I compared it to. It hums at the frequency of great teen films that simmer slowly in the gentle malaise of youth, like Dazed and Confused, Fast Times, or even The Virgin Suicide, Empire Records, or Submarine, or whatever the one that you resonated with most was back then.
I love all those.
Yeah, like it love captures all of those things. Like, yeah. This is such a unique feeling of that. And I think for someone like you that loves that feeling, that specific teen malaise, I think this will really sparkle for you. Like,
I'm excited. I got excited at the trailer. And I'd never heard of it. But as soon as I was watching it, I was like, well, this looks like it was made for me.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I'm into.
And the real thing that, like, I loved most in this is the Korean exchange student played by Bae Doona, who's from Cloud Atlas, an actor I really like. It is just one of the most exciting screen performances I've seen in this space because every choice that she makes is so surprising. Like, just everything about it is so surprising, yet it feels so lovingly honest to like teen weirdos. Mm. Like they just go, yeah, teenager, they're weird. They don't know how to act. They don't know how to use their body.
Yeah.
There's something about that performance that creates this really true to life feeling of that person that you either were one of them or you observed one. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But there's a new 4K restoration. It's been doing some cinemas here in Sydney. Golden Age, where you saw the trailer, it's where I saw the movie as well, and just loved it. Like it's a little long. It's like, how long is it? It is just under 2 hours.
It's all right.
But it's slow. But once it gets you, you go, shit, I didn't realize. It just gets
yeah,
you.
I'll go to the next screening of Golden Age if they do any more, because that did look right up my alley.
You will love it. And a little bit of surrealism too. There's one I thought of just before. What did I bounce off earlier where you said something? Oh, that's.
Was it during Beau's Afraid or was it during Ghost World?
No, I think it was Beau's Afraid, but I can't remember. Oh, well, you get two. I won't give you three.
All right. But if you think of it.
Yeah, I'll text it to you.
Yeah, I'll give you my number. And I'll
put it on
the record.
Yeah, give me a number.
My people will give you. You're going to send me.
I get it up on the system.
If you think of it, email my manager.
Hey, I just was thinking of another film. I caught up with Cam James today. This may seem out of place, but I did think of a film that I think he might like. If you could pass it on to him at your nearest convenience, I would really like that.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Well, Cam, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thanks
once
for
again
having me.
On The Last Video Store. Love talking to you about movies,
dude,
babe.
I love it. Thanks for having me. And congratulations on 2 years of this show.
Thank you.
It's been a blast watching you thrive.
Oh, thank you, darling. Hey, is there anything that you want to point the babies to?
Yeah, okay. I would like to point them to your solo show that you are about to tour.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
VHS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Melbourne Comedy Festival. Go see that. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Cameron gave me the key that unlocked the entire show.
Did I?
Yes. You told me. Are you good? Because the premise of the show is I'm telling interesting, funny, silly stories about that, or embarrassing stories mainly around films I have a relationship to.
Yeah.
And he said, are you going to do anything about that story about how you did Glengarry Glen Ross as a monologue? I was like, shit, I think I will. I hadn't thought about it, and now it's like the key to the show.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I can't wait to see that. Go see Sam Taunton's show as well at the festivals.
And you directed it.
Well, in theory, it doesn't feel like it. All I'm doing is like sitting and going, yeah, that's awesome.
That's
is that
directing.
A director?
That's what a director does.
It just feels like all I'm doing is saying, that's great.
Can I ask you, are you wearing a flannel? Are you wearing a cap?
I'm wearing a black turtleneck.
Okay, yes. That's theatre director.
Yeah, okay.
That's a theatre director.
I'm more of a dramaturg.
Yeah, you're dramaturging it. You're turging it up with Sam Thornton.
And I'm not touring a show this year, but I am in a TV show that's coming out. I don't think I can say the date until they announce it, but it is very soon in the next month or so. And it's called Bad Company. It's written by Ann Edmonds, starring Ann Edmonds and Kitty Flanagan and myself and Will Gibb and a couple of other people. And it'll be on ABC. And it's a very funny, fun comedy. It's right up my alley. And I think people will like it.
I can't wait to see it.
I saw some of it the other day, and it was really, it really tickled me.
I mean, Kitty and Edda, of course, but my two favorite Reds, Will Gibb and Cam James. Genuinely, I can't wait to see this shit.
Yeah, Will is so good. He's been on this show, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Will is one of my favorite young comics where I go, oh, wow, I've taken a shot into this boy.
Yeah, I love Will. Yeah. He's so good. You should get Edda or Kitty on this show.
I think I shall.
When Bad Company comes.
I might get the whole family, just all four of you guys.
Yeah,
just
and
there.
I'll just sort of sit in the background.
And you got another show?
Yeah, and I don't think I can say when that's coming out, but there's a horror series on Stan called The Killings, which I am in. And guess what? I play a podcaster, much like this.
Yeah, do you know how I know?
Because you auditioned for that part?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I got asked to audition. I go, you get to do it once. If a guy like me and you only get to play a podcast officially once.
I don't know if that's entirely true. I think you could play a podcaster multiple times. If Donnie Yen has played a blind martial artist in multiple things.
In multiple languages? Yeah.
It's fine. I think we can play podcasters and things. But yeah, that I don't know. I think that's out soon too. I think it's in a similar time. But yeah, that'll be cool. I saw some of that the other day.
Oof.
And I never cool, man. I never liked to see myself, but I saw myself in a very horror scene. And I was like, far out, I look like I'm really scared.
That's awesome.
I was like, wow, I look really scared. This is good acting.
Oh, man. Well, I can't wait to see those. They're going to be in the TV section of the Last Video Store. But yeah. Cameron, love you so much, brother.
Love you too, mate.
Thank you for coming on the show to 4 more years.
Yes, to 4 more.
4 more.
To the next step.
To the next step. Now we're going to go get laid.
The Last Video Store.
Thank you all so much for joining us on another year of The Last Video Store. Truly, I've had such a beautiful time making this show with all of you Return Shoot Rats because it's great to get out there again doing like my comedy festival show and meeting so many of you. So many of you have been coming to my screenings, the ones at the Opera House, etc. But it's just been really nice hearing people even just on the street stop me about this show.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of stuff in my life, but there's something about this show where people are connecting to it in a different way to things I've done before,
mm-hmm.
where they I guess because it's just me up there sometimes,
yeah.
me and some other people, whatever, guests that are famous. But, you know, it's been really, really nice.
Yes.
And Em, you've been a really big part of that journey. So I'm so glad you're here with me.
Thanks, Alexi.
Steering the steering wheel of the Last Video Store.
That's what I do.
Editing out all my kerfuffles and all the times I seem dumb. You make me sound beautiful and smart.
Oh, no, I've been leaving them in.
No, I said don't. Don't leave them in. Don't leave them in. But truly, thank you all for joining us on another year of this show. Truly, so lovely to meet you all, especially now that I'm getting to go across Australia so much more these last couple of years. Just getting to meet all of you and seeing how much like something like this can help you on your journey find really great films. Ay, ay, ay. That's the good shit for me. That's what I do this for.
Yeah.
See you all at the Comedy Festival. See you all very soon. Come to the screening with Cam and I. Be a great way to celebrate with you guys. And get to see Cam and I reunite on stage. I'm trying to think of the last time we were on stage together. It's been a while. Come join us. It'll be so fun.
Yeah. Love you, Alexi.
Love you, Em. And love you, Return Shoot Ratties.